velvety soft bath hands and some real thud in the back, leading to moments like this. And McConaughey, and he's snaking his way through. And in Clark de Glanville, fucking a singer is standing, waiting, pouncing. Big Joe makes his a double. Oh, he's gone through on his own. Josh Matabesi, ender of worlds, destroyer of walls. Spencer whips it away. Beautifully done. Gathered, scored. The two young bucks who underline their love of this place earlier in the week. Orlando Bailey and Max Ajomo conspire in thrilling fashion.
Hello and welcome to the Bath Rugby Plug, the rugby podcast by the fans, for the fans, plugging the boys in blue, black and white. The Six Nations is over, but the Premiership is so nearly back after a long awaited return. And we are back, and I am back. My name is Gabriel, and I am joined as ever to talk all things Bath rugby ahead of the run-in by my good friend and fellow Bath fan, Tom.
Hello, mate. Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? As you would say, it's been a while between drinks, but it almost feels like we're embarking on a new mini season. Obviously, so much to play for, a lot of excitement to come, and also a thoroughly enjoyable Six Nations break. So, yeah, load of excitement in the air.
There is loads of excitement in the air, and we've got plenty to get to on the podcast. We thought we'd just slip a little one in there before the Premiership returns to allow you Bath fans to get caught up on all of the things that have happened over the last sort of 6-7 weeks in and around Bath, and then look ahead, as I said, to what is to come and a fascinating period of time for Bath rugby. An eagle-eared of you will notice that we are, unfortunately, back over Zoom. Tom, I've sent you out on a scouting mission to the Hong Kong Sevens. We've had Rory McConaughey, we've had Will Muir. You need to bring back the next electric winger.
Oh, sadly, I found out yesterday Antoine Dupont won't be playing, so I can't convince him to come over and have a stint, albeit he's obviously only the second best. He'd only be the second best nine in Bath. Yeah, the Bath rugby plug correspondent out in Hong Kong, I will be, to the extent that I'm sober, I'll be scouting out. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we'll be able to trust the reports that we get back from there. But yeah, we will be back.
You might get a BRP live from Hong Kong 7 Stadium.
I'm not sure that'll make it.
I'm not sure that'll make it past. I think you might change the Twitter password if that happened, but you know.
Yeah, that's got to get through a couple of people's sign off, and I don't think that's gonna get through, unfortunately. And yeah, we are back over Zoom, and Tom is away for a little bit now, so we may not be as regular as a kind of Wednesday morning release as we have been previously, just because of the nature of certain time zones. So all you need to do, Bath fans, is hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and all of our podcasts during this run-in will be delivered straight to your device. And what better time than to share this podcast with your friends? So go ahead and do that. It really does help us. This is still the Bath Rugby Plug, sponsored by Black and White Butchers. Tom Dunn, Bath Hooker's very own Black and White Butchers, the hog roast and events company run by Bath's very own number two. When you are next at the Rec, please do check out their stand next to the Swift Half. And we had a little bit of a partnership with them during the Six Nations to give away a signed Tom Dunn shirt. Jim Whittington ultimately was the winner of the signed shirt, and that shirt is on its way to Jim as we speak. So keep an eye out on socials if you do want to feel a little bit jealous, but congrats to Jim on taking away the BRP points giveaway competition over the Six Nations. Let's get straight into it, Tom, then. And we have had this kind of 6 or 7 week break from the Premiership. It's new this season, obviously going down to 10 teams, not something we've seen before. Normally we've been playing in and around the Six Nations. I think previously a lot of fans have been quite keen on this break, just because the teams that have a lot of players in the Six Nations are ultimately the ones that are most affected by that during that period. But that hasn't been the case as much this year. How have you actually found it now that we've got ultimately what at times we wish for?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think the Six Nations itself was, as a exciting tournament. I really enjoyed it, a mix of storylines and drama that there was. So I think that was enough to satiate my rugby appetite. But I do enjoy, I don't know, I feel like even us as real avid, you know, supporters of the club, you know, we're talking about it every day, it did feel like a real drop-off in momentum of what, for me, was building as of a really nice season. To have the kind of friendlies, you know, during March, I just feel like we could have kept, or the fixture list could have kept momentum up a little bit better in the season. So I'm not sure I've loved it. As I say, it feels like we're kind of at a standing start, and some of the interest that the club and the league position and the Champions Cup was garnering, I think, has been lost a little bit. Mm. But albeit, I completely understand why they do it fixture-wise, and also for the players. It must be brilliant as players to have some decent time off for recovery, and, you know, ultimately that helps the injury list and helps the quality of the game as well. So yeah, I'm not convinced yet, but I enjoy the Six Nations enough to get me through this period.
Yeah, I think it's weird, isn't it? I think they've got to do one of two things, in my opinion. They've either got to, and players aren't going to like this, they've either got to get rid of these break weeks in the Six Nations, or they've got to schedule Premiership Rugby during those weeks. And if they're going to have one or two, they've got to have that. Because to have no rugby, or, you know, no kind of top level professional rugby in England during a weekend in February was not acceptable in my mind. I just didn't know what to do with myself, to be quite frank. So, my personal preference would just be bash this Six Nations out in 5 weeks. We may have to see a little bit more squad rotation. That's fine. That would be my personal preference. Or go down to one and have one game. That becomes a lot more difficult for the Premiership team. So, before this season, I was calling for ditching Italy, having four rounds, and everyone gets a bye week built in, and it's done in a month. But maybe we need to ditch Wales after this.
Well, season. I was going to say, you've always been able to rotate with there being five teams in the Six Nations. There's still five teams in the Six Nations. It's just that Italy are now one of them. I thought that was brilliant. Look, and it was a great Six Nations. I'm just going to, you know, throw in the game against Ireland, which I was lucky enough to be at. Spoiling that Grand Slam party was really sweet. England looked like they're getting some stuff going. There was, you know, decent Bath involvement in that effort as well. And, you know, you chuck in the Welsh wooden spoon. It's kind of, what more can you want? But I agree, that's a good point on the rest weekends. The second rest weekend in particular, it just seems like, do they really need this, right? Like, a lot of these players will be playing week in, week out for their clubs anyway prior to that. So, one or the other, I think.
Yeah, and what did you make of the Six Nations? Like, maybe more specifically, Tom, from a Bath point of view, I think my opinion was that it was a really good tournament. It certainly got better. I think there was a little bit of a hangover from the World Cup in the early rounds. But I think specifically the last two rounds were some of the best and most exciting rugby I've seen, well, certainly since the World Cup, but also in previous Six Nations. Yeah, I thought it was outstanding. And I think England kind of typified that. They really got better. And those last two performances against Ireland and France were really good performances. And I saw an interesting question. I can't remember whether it was The Guardian or The Telegraph. One of the papers posed a question. If you were going to buy a ticket to watch any of those teams after that Six Nations, which would it be? And I think England are kind of near the top of that list, and that's not been the case for a little while. So I think they really found something there. They found a little bit of form, and I think they found some go forward, which was so lacking. so lacking in those early rounds. Lawrence started to get over the game line. Ford started to take it to the line, and kind of picking Martin, Atoje and Chessum transformed that team. I thought England really started to find something there, and I really enjoyed the Six Nations as a whole. There was a kind of few upsets, but I think ultimately when you look at the table at the end, that's probably where I thought it would roughly be. But I think nonetheless, it was a really, really good tournament that got better and better.
Yeah, some of the results made for great viewing. It was brilliant. And yeah, maybe moving on to touch on some of the Bath guys involved. So you mentioned Ollie Lawrence, and I thought the way that he bounced back from a very tough start against Scotland at 12, having not played for over a month, he looked he looked pretty rusty. Plenty of handling errors, looked a bit frenetic. But as you said, with England more generally, he really came into his own in those two games against Ireland and France. He showed that I think he is genuinely world-class on his day with ball in hand. He gives you that point of difference that particularly now Manu has headed off to Bayonne. No one else, I think, brings in an England shirt in that department. So, yeah, the tries against France in particular were really powerful, brilliant tries. So I thought a good tournament for Ollie Lawrence. And, yeah, he's got that 12 shirt kind of nailed down for England. It's going to be interesting for CG what they do with from a Bath point of view. Obviously, he's occupied the 13 shirt for that. And it is a different position. So I'll be interested to see what they do there. But a very good tournament for him. And let's hope he brings some of that form back to the rec.
Yeah, two tries in that last round were pivotal in Jim's securing of the shirt. He was definitely cheering.
What was the tally in the end?
52 took it home, which was, yeah, we had someone on 51, someone on 52, someone on 53 and someone on 54. So yeah, it came down right to the wire. And I think one thing that some people certainly didn't see coming as part of it was Finn Russell's kicking, particularly in the early rounds. He was metronomic. I think he was shooting at 100% through the first three rounds, which when he's been at about 60% for Bath this season, I think some people's guesses certainly didn't factor that in. What did you make of Finn and the other Bath boys?
I think he even said, didn't he, in an interview, he's like, I'm sorry to Bath fans. No. But hopefully it sparks. Hopefully it sparks a bit of form with his kicking boots.
He didn't say sorry to Bath fans, and quite interestingly, well, maybe I just find it interesting, but he said, I'm sorry to the Bath owner. I wonder why he's sorry to the Bath owner. Not the Bath fans, not his coaches, not his fellow players. He said, yeah, I'm worried the Bath owner might be a bit concerned. Yeah, we know who signs off those checks for Finn.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But yeah, another really strong tournament for him. I thought, you know, particularly well in the game against England springs to mind, I think like shows again, something we've said before, how his kind of unpredictability and the range of skills he has creates uncertainty in opposition that creates opportunities for those out wide. And I think from what I saw of Scotland, which was a decent amount, he really ran the show for them and led from the front. And he's pole position for that Lions 10 shirt next year, and potentially even Lions captain when you look at the way that he's you know, they're not that many options, G, and he could be our Lions captain, blue, black and white, first ever Lions captain, I think it would be, as a Bath boy. So yeah, another strong tournament for Finn Russell. Good for Netflix as well.
Yeah, lovely for Netflix. He kicked a lot, right? But I thought their performance against Ireland in the last round was... It was, they just kicked everything they had, and I don't think they really gave themselves a shot. Ireland were always going to wear them down. But yeah, you know, he played well, and Cameron featured a little bit off the bench. I think they're really struggling with Cameron to get him into a team with Hugh Jones. So I think when Tuipulotu got injured, and in that last game, they brought in some other big centre from Scotland. So I think, you know, his trouble is going to be trying to get that 13 shirt. I think they're looking to have someone in that 12 shirt that can kind of get them over the game line, whether that be Tuipulotu or someone else. There was also some other England boys, Bath boys, that featured heavily for England. Tom Underhill in particular. What did you make of him?
I thought he grew into the Six Nations as well. He was all over the place against France, like bulldozing around, nailing people as he always does, but also looked, you know, had some really nice moments with ball in hand. I have a vague memory of him being involved in an offload that created a try. That classic hazy memory of a Six Nations try that I'm sure many listeners have. Yeah, nice to see him back as a regular starter, and touch wood, he is starting to put those concussion issues behind him and string together some regular game time, because, you know, the sort of player he is, he needs confidence in that particular, you know, that injury won't flare up. So yeah, good to see him in the black scrum hat as well, looking pretty fierce, and a good tournament for him. Good game time.
Yeah. I just wonder what would have happened. You know, quite an interesting moment in England's Six Nations campaign actually happened at the rec against Racing almost a month before, when Alfie Barbary got his red card. like, what happens if Barbary doesn't get that red card? Because I think at that point he's looking like he's looking nailed on for the squad and potentially starting in that eight shirt. And then what happens with Earl? I think Earl's, you know, odds on at this point for player of the tournament. Where does Underhill play? Like, do they play the three locks? Like, that was a key inflection point. And yeah, Barbary missed out. But I think probably ultimately England found a nice balance in that back row with Earl, Underhill and Chesson, was it, that played six in the end?
Chesson, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice combination, for sure. Shall I just touch on Contras? I just mind a tapping of the watch referee style TG. We thought we were going to try and be relatively brief. We're still on the Six Nations and we're 10 or so minutes in. Shall I just do quickly touch on the other boys involved, albeit, you know, not as they weren't as notable, their involvements. Firstly, Will Stewart. So started the first two games against Italy and Wales and then was removed for the, you know, the three kind of more important and kind of, I guess, higher tier games. He's got 38 caps now. So he's an experienced player, and Dan Cole remains the tight head of choice. So again, it's a little bit of a concern, I think, that the confidence isn't in him as a 27-year-old tight head. He should be coming into his prime. Ben Urbano, 5 minutes total in the Six Nations against Italy. It's tough reward for the couple of months that he's spent on the training field, but, you know, please, he's remained fit first and foremost during England camp, and yeah, he'll have had some really, really good training time in him, and I'm sure we'll be chomping at the bit to get back at it. And then probably one that you'll want to say something about as well, G, Ben Spencer, only 33 minutes against Scotland, kind of a lost cause by the time he came on. He looked solid. It's such a shame that he didn't get more of an opportunity. You know, we were even touting him to start, but such a shame he didn't get more of an opportunity in the kind of 21-22 shirt. He can't do any more at club level, as we know. So it looks like it's going to be tough for him to get a regular break, which we know he deserves. But there we go.
Yeah, he absolutely deserves. And when he came back for the Leinster game, which we'll come on to, he was chomping at the bit, to say the least, to prove a point, I guess. But as you say, there's not really much more of a point he can prove.
Yeah,
he's playing so well for Bath, has done since he joined and previously at Saracens. I just don't think, for one reason or another, both Jones and Borthwick rate him as a starting international nine, which, yeah, it baffles me, but kind of, there we go.
You mentioned the Leinster game. Do you want to, I don't know if this is following the agenda, but do you want to touch on that? I was in an airport trying to watch it, trying to download TikTok, which is proper next gen of social media. I mean, judging by our listening numbers, not many Bath fans have even discovered podcasts yet. So I think TikTok, that was satire. But TikTok is, definitely a new experience for sure. I actually quite enjoyed it with Josh McAnally on comms. What did you make of that game overall?
So we're just rolling straight through to it. Yeah, let's go with it. We'll come back to kind of talk under 20s and a few other bits in and around the Six Nations. Yeah, as you say, Bath played kind of two pre-season friendlies, the second of which was against Leinster, where Ben Spencer featured. It was on TikTok. I'm now on TikTok. I'm not 100% sure what that means. People that follow us on socials will be well aware at this point that we're not as adept as we potentially could and should be in that kind of realm. But I'm on it. And I thought, to be fair, I don't really know how it works, but I thought whether it was the club or whether they had someone external coming and do it, the kind of production and the event was really, really well done. You know, we always ask, you know, we've seen a lot of streams of rugby and of different sports, and we've seen some good, some bad. Multiple camera angles, a kind of clock and a scoreboard that worked. Good commentary with Josh McNally, as you said. Plenty of replays. And yeah, I thought it was really, really well done. And kind of it being on TikTok for me had absolutely no kind of bearing on that. It took me 30 seconds to sign up. And then I was watching it and I really enjoyed it. And really enjoyed the performance from Bath as well. 35-7 winners they were in the end. 32 players, I think, featured for Bath. Ben Spencer had the number 30 on his back, which was odd to see. And let's have it right. Leinster had 16 of the 23 in the Ireland squad against Scotland. So there's a lot of boys missing for Leinster. But they still, you know, is a team that are used to missing a lot of players and play URC games and URC teams missing a lot of players. So it's not something that they'll be completely alien to. But nonetheless, there was a kind of golfing class between the two sides. And I think some standouts from a Bath point of view. So I thought Max Ajoma was the standout. He played the most minutes. He played 70, 71 minutes. When you've got 16, 17 subs, I think that's a really nice nod to how well he was playing. I think, yeah, Ben Spencer, as I mentioned, came off the bench, had about 20 minutes, 30 minutes in the middle of the second half and scored a try himself, set one up for Will Muir. Looked, yeah, so dangerous, so quick, like he could have played 300 minutes, to be honest with you. He was just, yeah, storming about and was absolutely everywhere.
On Max, I was going to say, we didn't mention him and the horse featured in the Saxons game, which, you know, you talk about men against boys. That was, I think it was Portugal C, wasn't it, or something. And they looked like they had a bit of fun. I think it ended up 90-something points scored by England. Some good, some bad, and some ugly from Max in that game. But he was certainly showcasing all the skills that we know he has. They looked like they enjoyed that. One thing that I was going to mention as well and throw back to you was how good is it to see Ted Hill back? And I don't know if you or listeners have been watching some of the YouTube videos that Bath have been putting out about his recovery. He is looking in frightening shape. Absolutely ridiculous, Nick. So he would be a frightening prospect to play against. And how good, A, to see him back. We know, like, won best forward of the year last year in, you know, end of season awards. He's a quality operator. And now you look at the stock that we have in that back row with him, with Underhill, with Alfie, with Reed, with Bayliss, Kutsia, Klurter. It's staggering. But yeah, great to see him back after a decent layoff.
Yeah, we were going to get to the Saxons and Ted Hill in a kind of nicely rounded and kind of building up schedule running order that I'd crafted, but you've jumped us nicely ahead with the Leinster game. But yeah, Ted Hill played 40 minutes, wasn't kind of everywhere, but yeah, lovely to see him back and he'll grow strength to strength. Landy won the Paul Roger. I was relatively surprised about that. He did kick really, really well, but I thought there were potentially other people that stood out more. I mentioned Max and Horse came off the bench and scored twice. And the final point on this one was, no, I think that was all I had actually on this one. Yeah, just quite difficult to keep track of the players, especially in that second half. But a good win, and combine that with the game that we played the previous week, Tom, against Gloucester, a game that none of us were able to see, a 59-19 victory, 9 tries we scored in this one, and we definitely fielded a stronger side than what Gloucester fielded. They had the Premiership Rugby Cup the following week to keep in mind, so they were definitely not in the same area of development and build up to the Premiership as we were, but nonetheless a nice victory and plenty of tries to be scored.
Well, speaking of those two things, I remember a couple of seasons ago they did something similar in the Premiership Rugby Cup, stuck out a really decent side when we had academy boys mainly, and they stuck 50 or so on us. So nice to give them a taste of their own medicine. Congratulations on some long-awaited silverware. Going back to King's Home. Yeah, on that game, the main thing I wanted to mention, so yeah, it was a 29-man squad that was named, and the person that really caught my eye was, and it's not difficult, at 6'8" and 125 kilos, was Jacques Duplessis. And again, Bath fans probably, and listeners, a lot of listeners won't have heard of Jacques Duplessis. So, G, do you want to give a bit of background as to how this signing, or should we call it a signing, how this came about?
Yeah, so shortly after we recorded our last podcast and kind of went into a little hibernation, Bath announced that 3 players were joining the club. to kind of finish their rehab process that had been going on at other clubs, and then were likely to feature in these friendlies and then potentially in the final games of the season. So those three players were Regan Grace, Jacques Duplessis and Neil LaRue. And those first two, Regan Grace and Jacques Duplessis, featured heavily in that first friendly against Gloucester. Jacques Duplessis ultimately with the Paul Roger man of the match. Paul, if you're listening, we are still keen on that partnership. Regan Grace, a name that particularly Welsh and rugby league fans of Bath will be very familiar with. I think he's St. Helens' all-time leading try scorer, and you're not going to tell me otherwise, so let's go with that. He was a rugby league star for them and for Wales, caught a few of his highlights, and yeah, rugby league wingers, a lot about finishing, and some of the finishes that he put in were fantastic. He decided to make the move to Union, signed for Racing, never played for Racing due to a pretty nasty Achilles injury, but is back now and has signed for Bath. The initial report was that he just signed for these two friendlies, but I kind of think that might have been a little bit misleading. I think he is available for the rest of the season. He looked great by all accounts in that friendly. There's already talk about him getting a contract at potentially Gloucester next season. So yeah, everyone that I speak to and everyone that's spoken to me about Regan Grace says that he is a really exciting prospect. So we've seen how wingers can be negatively affected by lower body injuries, particularly Achilles. But fingers crossed he comes back well. And that kind of Bath wing shirt, like third, fourth wing, it is open. And so, yeah, a potential for him. And then, yeah, moving on to Jacques.
I've asked you there about Jacques Duplessis. we've had chapter and verse on Regan Grace. I appreciate that, but I'm more interested in the, as we've spoken about before, 6'8", 125 yeah, kilo.
Sorry.
Jacques Duplessis, clearly not difficult to work out where his background is. But yeah, the Blue Bulls, a very experienced guy as well, G. 100 appearances for Montpellier. And I think on the kind of more clear side on what's going to happen with him for the rest of the season. So I think there's a provisional deal in place with the Bulls that will be able to keep Duplessis until the end of the season, which is great, right? I mean, with all the stuff around RG Simon and the rumours now even about like Ross Maloney, it's so clear that this is the sort of player that we want to bring into the fold. So to see someone who, I mean, just Google him, who is a monster, come in and immediately make an impact in that game, get the Man of the Match award, is exactly what we want to see. So I'm keen to see him involved in some match days over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and he can play both lock and six as well. And that versatility is something that Johan is keen on and that we will need given the run-in that we all come to. Yeah, exactly the sort of player that we want. And now just clear the runway for me for a couple of minutes on Neil LaRue. No, we don't know. We know a little bit less about Neil. He didn't feature, has yet to feature, but maybe watch this space on that one. I think that kind of covers the Bath pre-season, Bath kind of mid-season, pre-season, and the games from there. A couple of bits of other news that we should touch on. So we mentioned England Saxons, England A, 91-5 win over Portugal. England under-20s won the Six Nations, the under-20s Six Nations, in what was a humdinging tournament. They beat France with a bonus point in France to claim that title. They drew with Ireland 30-30 the weekend before. Both the home games against Wales and that one against Ireland that I mentioned were at the RAC, played in front of a great crowds. I've spoken to a few people that were at those games and said they were great. And what was stood out for them was the scrum of England, and in particular, you know, the prop department and Bath were lucky enough to have two of those props. So Billy Seller and Scott Kirk started a couple of the last games and featured in the first few games along with Asher Okafor-Jaw, the Sale prop, and that department in particular really powered England to victory. The game against Wales, which I saw a little bit of, was men against boys a little bit. So exciting times there. And then also quickly, Tom, Bath under-18s won the under-18 or champions of the under-18 premiership. They won all of their games and beats Northampton Saints in the final in another great game. That's the first time Bath have ever won that tournament. Exciting times, certainly, from both the 20s and 18s to Bath.
Yeah, some brilliant news.
Some brilliant news, Tom. Perhaps some kind of less brilliant news then. So Matt Gallagher, announced over this period that he would be leaving. He has signed for Benetton. He's got Italian grandparents, so perhaps that might give it away why he's signed. 2 seasons with Bath, 35 appearances. Sad to see Matt go, I think.
100%. I think this is a big loss, to be honest. You know, he came in and made an immediate impact. He was a very savvy signing for Johan to bring across from Munster. He won 2 awards. I was looking back at the end of season awards last year. Best back and also the player's player of the year. And that kind of just shows, you know, the impact he has and also kind of the respect that he has around like the whole playing group. As you say, he's got a route in to play for a you know, revitalised Italy side. I think his grandparents actually live in Northern Italy. I think part of it is to go out and spend some time there. And you can't really blame him for wanting to go. But yeah, I think a really top quality, valuable player for any squad to have. You know, some of his steadiness under the high ball and that booming left foot, G, that I know you'll miss in particular. Into touch is going to be a big loss. So yeah, I think with Tom de Glanville injured as well, he's going to have an important part to play for the rest of the season. And I think he'll go down as someone that we look back on his time at Bath very fondly, wish him well for Italy and kind of wish that we'd had a few more seasons out of him, to be honest.
Yeah, few things on Galli. Only 35 appearances for Bath, and it just feels like he's had a really big impact for someone that's only played 35 times. Yeah. When he came over with Johan, we were pretty sceptical. We hadn't seen much from him at Munster, and his time at Saracens wasn't amazing. But I remember when we first spoke to Johan, one of the players that he picked out was to come in and have the impact. And not for the first time, we were a little bit wrong, and Johan was absolutely spot on. Matt Gallagher has been great, and we will really, really miss him. But yeah, best of luck to Matt Gallagher. And de Glanville injured, Sam Harris will likely now get a bit more game time and then ahead going into next season. That kind of rounds off the news, Tom. I just want to kind of mention one thing before we get into Sale and the run-in. The season tickets have just come out. They've gone up about 25% on last season. So I just wonder whether how these clubs work is, obviously that's not great PR. Are we expecting a few contract renewals? I know when the last set of contract renewals came out, they said more coming soon. This is exactly the sort of time that the club are going to announce something. So I think keep your eyes peeled. There's a lot of anticipation about the run-in, about all these games to come. They've slipped in this 25% increase in season tickets. There was a significant one last season as well. So I think just watch this space in terms of news and in terms of contract renewals. Right, let's get on to what was meant to make up the kind of bulk of this podcast, and that is the run-in and Sale. Sale, obviously, our next game this upcoming Sunday at the Rec. If you're going, please do have a great time. The league is so, so tight. We are currently sat in third, but there is just 7 points from second down to eighth place, which is Harlequins down to Bristol. So it is so, so tight between those tight sides going for that top four battle. Really exciting times, Tom. Is there any games, before we understand, is there any games in this run-in or any periods of games that you kind of find pivotal in what's to come?
Well, I mean, six left, that tight in the league. You have to say they're kind of all pivotal. Obviously, Europe as well against Exeter, see how far we can get in that competition. But yeah, looking at the Prem, I think ideally to guarantee or to give us a very good chance of getting top four, we probably need to get 4 wins or 3 at an absolute minimum, but then with bonus points chucked in there. So if you look at the fixtures we've got left, I hope that's where you were directing me, what you were directing me to talk about. We've got Newcastle away. So that hopefully should be a given. That's the penultimate game of the season. Interestingly, we've also got Saints at home for the last game. Now, if they continue their form, it might almost be a rest weekend for them if they've already got a home quarterfinal, so a semi-final, sorry. So that's something to think about. Then the other games, we've got Sale home, Quins away, Exeter away, Sarries at home. So those are not easy games. And you think we need two or three of those, assuming we beat Newcastle. So, yeah, I mean, every game is very, very important. And I think our home form over the last season and a bit, to be honest, has been really good. So we need to target in particular those home games against Sale and Saracens. So in other words, this Sale game, I think, is very, very important, to be honest. So we can come on to talk about Sale, but, you know, they're having a very poor run of form. They've had their couple of friendlies against Falcons and Saints over March. Prior to the Six Nations, sorry, their form was really on the slide. So they lost 5 on the bounce in all competitions, and they haven't won since before Christmas. So hugely important game, I think. First and foremost for the points, permutations, and how tight it is, as I've just been explaining. But also, I think, just psychologically, to get this streak and this new mini season off to a winning start. So no pressure, lads.
Yeah, and it's so. I mean, we've been talking a bit more than we should have done. I think that's just kind of because we're so excited about what's to come. There's just so much to play for, and it's so tight, and it's in our hands. We play first, second, we're third, fourth, and fifth. Okay, so we can, if we play well, we can absolutely get a semi-final spot, a home semi-final spot if we play well. Everybody's going to be playing everybody. It's just going to be about, for me, who can keep fit. And when you kind of pepper in and when you rotate and when you pepper in these players and getting that balance right between all of these remaining games. And also what is going to be absolutely pivotal is Europe, because all of the top six are in the last 16 of Europe. And Europe, these European weeks, if you go all the way to Europe, you've now not got a break until the 7th of June. Okay. So how well you do in Europe could ultimately affect your Premiership form and how much you can rotate. So with all of the top six in these last 16 of the Champions Cup, with everybody playing everybody, with all of the teams having to kind of manage the return of Six Nations players and whether they're Scottish, whether they're English, whether they're Irish, all depends on when they can be brought back, how many minutes they can play. So much of it, in my opinion, is just going to come down to how you manage this squad, how the teams you're playing are going to manage their squads, and how well your squad is managed.
Yeah,
off the field. And it's going to be fascinating.
When you talk about the squad rotation, I completely agree. And I don't think that you're talking about wholesale rotation we see for one game that they put a second team out. So how it's going to be at the fringes, they're going to have to think about what combinations work best and try and keep continuity in combinations in different position groups. How would you be thinking about that? So, for example, Six Nations guys coming back, would you be looking to stick those straight in? How would you be going about it? Would you be looking to focus on home games potentially? What would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost glad for the first time that I'm not Johan van Gran. He's got a really, really difficult few weeks coming up in terms of this squad selection and squad management. But it's something that he's shown in the past that he's pretty adept at. Personally, I think if there's three games that we need to target that are currently in the schedule, that's this Sunday against Sale. That is Saracens, the other home game. I think it's on a Friday night in a few weeks' time. And I think it's the Exeter last 16 game. I think they're the three games that I would be going, right, they're in our schedule now. They're going to be full strength sides. And I think that then gives you enough flexibility where if you lose the quarterfinal, then you've got a week off and then you can adjust and maybe go full strength against Exeter again in the Premiership, or gives you the flexibility to rest against Newcastle or go or need to go full strength against Northampton. I think that kind of is three games dotted throughout the season, two home games, and then a European last 16 game, which we haven't had in years, that we absolutely have to target. And then from there, you just work around injuries and you work around other bits and bobs.
How good is it, just to take a step back, that we're saying the games we should target to get, you know, in the last 16 of Europe, Champions Cup, and to get to the top four are Saracens, Sale, Exeter. It's brilliant. You know, we started this podcast, that would have been dreamland. So we shouldn't forget how far we've come, but I agree. And I think a key thing to think about, right, is the positions and the players where they are above and beyond. What do I mean? It's late here. They're head and shoulders above their deputy in that position, right? So Benno Urbano at loose head, probably, or how they manage Urbano, De Toit and Will Stewart as our three first choice props. Obviously, Ben Spencer, absolutely key, and whether he just plays every minute, we will see. And Finn Russell, right? He has played every minute of the Six Nations. He must have been one of the few players to have done that in all five games. You know, does Orlando Bailey come in at all? Will Sam Harris, you know, be leaned on to come in that position off the bench potentially, or will Finn Russell, basically, will we just get value for our money, shall we say, and chuck him in? I think those are a few positions where those guys are so key, right? Because the guys coming in to replace them, let's be honest, just aren't quite at the same level.
Yeah, I mean, it's so exciting, isn't it? It is, yeah. TNT have recently, today, I think, announced that they're, from next season, going to be broadcasting all Premiership games, which is fantastic news. And they must be absolutely delighted with how it is sitting, because hopefully there's a little bit of peak in viewership post a pretty good Six Nations. And this is just, I'm really, really looking forward to it, as you might be able to tell. And I think you mentioned there that the players that we've kind of got and not got a need to prioritise. What is really good, I think, is when you look at the squad overall, there isn't a huge amount of injury toll, and credit to Bath. They released yesterday, Wednesday, as we record, a medical update, post-Six Nations medical update, where we have four players who are currently sidelined. So Chris Kluter, shoulder for 2 weeks. Tom de Glanville's a new one that we didn't know. He's out for 10 weeks, so he's likely to miss the whole remainder of the season, which is just such a shame. Josh McNally with a neck injury, he'll be back late April. And GJ Van Velsen with a thumb injury, he'll be back early April. Obviously really disappointing for those guys and de Glanville in particular, but all in all, that's a pretty good injury list. Add to that Du Plessis, Grace, Ted Hill coming back. We have got a lot of options. And so, yeah, we're in a really, really good place. And yeah, we're third favourites to win the Premiership, which is fucking nuts, to be quite honest. So yeah, it's really, really exciting.
I mean, likewise, you know, the break will mean that Sale are in a very good spot, injury-wise and availability-wise. And you look at the internationals that they had involved. So four guys in the England squad, but outside of George Ford, I don't think anyone played a minute. So Ben Curry, Luke Cowan-Dickie and Tom Roebuck, I don't think they were involved in any game. So, you know, they're going to be chomping at the bit in the same way that Ben Spencer, Benno Urbano will be, guys that, you know, didn't play much either, but trained. So yeah, I think as well, what will be key is, will George Ford be playing? I'm so impressed and delighted, to be honest, as a George Ford fan, to see how he grew into the Six Nations and how well he pulled the strings, for example, in that great win at Twickenham against Ireland. So he's obviously an incredibly key player for them. I think the drop off to Robert Dupree, in my opinion, is significant and changes the way that they're able to play, in particular, how they're able to access what is a dangerous back three in Aaron Reid, Tom Roebuck and Joe Carpenter. So I think that'll be important when it comes to selection day.
Yeah, and it really, this game is a lot about kind of how much can we read into form of these teams, because, you know, Sale...
To take an F1 analogy, G, who's been sandbagging over the March period, and how are we both going to look in race trim?
Yeah, that, and also kind of previously, you mentioned Sale's terrible record prior to the Six Nations break. Let's not forget, Bath weren't playing their best stuff. You know, they lost to Leicester Tigers on New Year's Eve. They scraped past Gloucester in that game where we had about a million held over the line, and then lost Ashton Gate to Bristol. So we're not exactly kind of going into the break in flying form either. But I do kind of think that is so far in the past now for both sides, right? And yeah, we probably had two easier fixtures based on the teams that were selected. Sale, as you mentioned, Newcastle and Northampton, two strong sides they were going up against. Probably not. So I don't think there's a huge amount you can read into that. That, you know, Sale is a side that I think are quite, you know, this may be doing them a disservice, but quite an easy side to work out how to beat, but also a very difficult side to beat. They are really, really predicated on getting kind of the physicality, the game line physicality, you know, when attacking and defending, dominant tackles, dominant hits. That's where they make their bread and butter, right? And if we can match that, then I think that we possess the higher quality in the halfbacks and in the back line and some of the other areas that I think we'll have enough. You know, we did really, really well, if you remember, in the Sale away game earlier in the season, where we played a frankly almost second string side and ran them really, really close, and that was a tight tussle on a Friday night up there. So I think that's going to be key. We need to match them physically and kind of let the rest of it do the talking.
That's rugby in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's fair. And set piece as well.
Set piece can be huge. You know, Thomas the Toy is such an important player for us. His try against Leinster was enjoyable. I think when Josh McNally said in commentary, when we get that close to the line, he is nigh on unstoppable from that distance. I'm sure there's going to be a bit of a battle right down on both respective lines in pick and go area. So another try or two from him to add to his long tally would be great. But yeah, you're absolutely right with Sale. They've got some big men, some big South African men. I think, you know, we're building a similar mould of squad, to be honest, up front. But I think, as you say, the quality that we have out wide is, you know, and particularly in the centre partnerships as well. We get Ollie Lawrence coming back, Max Ajomo with some confidence, Cam Redpath chomping in the bit to play. I think hopefully we'll have too much at home, but I do think all these games are going to be so close. I don't think anyone's going to run away with these. So it is going to be a nervy encounter on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I can't wait to have it back. And then on the other hand, I know that, yeah, Sunday, 3 o'clock, I'm just going to be a little bit of a nervous wreck. But yeah, so exciting to have it back.
It'll be 11 p.m. on a Sunday here. So there's no chance of me sleeping after that. So work on Monday will be fun, but I won't care a jot if we get the win and keep ourselves in prime position for a top four. And let's be clear, anything other than a top four finish here at this season is now seen as a disappointment. And again, great to be saying that, but the goalposts move and expectations move. So let's go and get this top four spot.
Yeah. You fancy us on Sunday?
I think so, yeah. I think at home, no George Ford, hopefully. And I think bringing back a strong, a pretty much full-strength side. I think the only guy that I think I would rest would be Sam Underhill, I think, given the strength elsewhere and given the game time that he's had. I'd bring Finn back in. All the other internationals would come back in. Whether Cam starts, I'm not sure. But I think at home, I'll go Bath 7 to 10 points, I think. But it won't be fun along the way.
that sums up the preview of this. It won't be as much excitement as there is. It won't be fun along the way. Tom, thank you for joining. We really enjoyed getting back together. And yeah, the anticipation grows ahead of the run-in, as Bath are dubbing it. Thank you for listening. Get behind the boys. Get behind Black and White Butchers. Share around the podcast. If you're going to any of the games during this period, then enjoy it. Hit us up. I'm certainly going to be taking in a few of them. So yeah, let's hope there's a few games left. Let's hope there's a run in Europe. Let's hope there's a run in the Premiership and we go all the way to the 7th of June. Let's see. Thank you for listening and stick behind the boys through thick and thin.